The story, as narrated...
Yeah, please translate.
I'm not sure what happened.
Somebody pretended to faint. And then I lost it after
and
that.
And somebody got it on.
Yeah.
This is a couple fellas now.
Right. Yeah.
This is Llewellyn and Sam.
Right.
It's Lou and Sam.
Lou and Sam.
it's Lou and Sam over beer and pickled herring, which, you know, could be anywhere in the Northwoods of Wisconsin.
I'd like to point out that
that's
that
on the Culver's menu, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
it's his morning draft.
Yeah.
That's your wakey wakey.
Uh-huh.
You can't, wakey wakey eggs and herring.
You can't drink all day if you don't start when you wake up.
A little hair of the dog there. Yeah. Yeah,
little herring of the dog.
Episode title. Episode 177. It's podcast. The guy and the guy and the guy.
The third guy being on Skype.
How's it going, Craig?
It's going good, Mike. How are you?
I'm good also.
Are you awake?
Or am I well? It is going good. I am going well. I'm doing well?
You do well. Superman does
good. I do well. Things do good.
Superman does good.
Okay.
You do well. I learned that from 30 Rock.
All right.
Let's talk to our guest.
In the year of our Lord, 1506.
Hey, Jim! From the cold bay of cold. How's it going, Jim?
This is awesome.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well.
There
thanks,
you go.
Awfully.
See, we're all learning.
Word nerd. Yeah.
And appropriate to the theme song, I am wearing my shirt that I got yesterday aboard the flagship Niagara.
Ooh.
Here at the Tall Ship Festival.
Tall
it says,
ships.
Don't give up the ship.
Were there any shirts that said, like, don't take no ship from no one?
No,
anything
this was
like
a
that?
Nice place.
Oh, no. It's not the Tall Ship Festival that Craig would run.
And our friends from Bounding, Maine, Crystal Renaissance Fair alumni, were here singing.
Out there singing, very nice.
We were singing, and I had the opportunity to, we were out standing on the deck of a reconstructed 17th century Spanish galleon. I looked over the aft castle deck. Walk rail.
Hold on. Pop quiz for Mike. What's the aft castle?
The high part in the back.
Very good.
Nice.
And the deck on top of it is called?
No idea.
The poop deck. Come on, Mike.
And why is it called? Let's do this because I was called upon several times yesterday to answer this. Why is it called the poop deck?
I don't know.
There's a big hole in the middle.
Actually, no, most men on a ship pooped forward, for the record. The toilets for the sailors were actually, if you see on the Victory, they're still there, where you can hang it over the rail, but it's all forward. The captain lives aft, so he wasn't going to have those wretched sailor bottoms hanging it out near his house.
Right,
okay.
So, the poop deck is so called because of the Latin word for aft or stern.
Okay.
Which is just poopadura, that's it. And so
an
we just borrowed that into the
somewhere.
French and have called
maybe.
It the poop ever since.
All right, interesting.
So I was out there on the aft castle looking out over the rail, and there at the quayside entertaining those waiting in line was Bounding, Maine, singing a lovely sea shanty while I was on a reconstructed ship. That was a fine high moment.
Nice. Good stuff. I didn't do anything nearly as interesting recently, although I have finally gotten back into playing in my every other week or so D&D game after not being in that for 3 months.
So does designing an RPG make you hate RPGs generally or make you miss other RPGs?
It makes me a little bit of all that. You know, there are times when I'm like, I don't want to go play something else because I've been dinking around with this thing. And I've kind of had my fill of RPGs for a little bit. But then there are also times when I find myself thinking, oh, I've done nothing but this thing. I'd like to just, you know, kill some goblins. Come on. My game doesn't have goblins in it. No fireballs. So I'm in that weird place right now where, the artwork is finalizing. It's all kind of in a just kind of, it's a lot of it's taken care of itself because the artists are all on top of stuff. And I'm
Wow, that's not usually the way that goes.
Starting to tinker a little bit with the new game, but I'm not working so hard on it that, where I was at some points over the last couple of years. So my design time has actually been kind of low. I'm just kind of, every so often I'll just sit down and tinker a little bit. But that'll have to start ramping up again in a couple of months once Mergers and Acquisitions is more or less wrapped up. But there's more to talk about that later. Other time.
There's more about that.
My words
talk about.
Fail.
I was going to say, is this a Saturday morning thing for you?
Let's do this.
What seems, Craig?
Jeebus. You know how they're making a sequel to Prometheus, which was in its own right a super duper prequel to the Aliens franchise.
Sure.
Yes. It kind of tells you a little bit about where those creatures sort of came from.
Oh, spoiler.
Everybody knows this, Jim. Okay, guess what, everybody? We're probably going to talk about some movies and TV shows over the course of the next hour. Spoilers. Yeah. If there's big stuff, we'll let you know. But there's talk still of, what's his name? Neil Blomkamp.
Who?
Neil Blomkamp doing another Alien movie proper with Sigourney Weaver that will be a continuation of Aliens. None of this Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection crap. Hicks will be back. Bishop will be back.
Wow.
Nude will be back.
Yes.
Like those other ones didn't happen?
Basically going to kick out of the canon. 3 and 4.
And Michael Biehn has been talking it up, saying, yeah, it's happening. There's one way or the other. This is going to happen. I mean, admittedly, this is the actor talking, and I'm sure he would just like to, see his character continue on and not get unceremoniously dumped in a crash down fire at the beginning of the next movie, like what happened. Aliens fans, let's hope, Sigourney Weaver, while she can still run around a little bit, unlike David Hasselhoff, by the way, who in Sharknado The Fourth Awakens had a really hard time running to that car. Oh my God.
I didn't notice that.
Oh my God.
I also forgot to watch the last 15 minutes of it this morning.
You didn't miss anything.
Well, while we're talking about it, I may have missed. Jim, did you see Sharknado The Fourth Awakens?
No, I did not. I have been ensconced in the Wisconsin Dells for the past week.
That's
at water parks.
That's a much better way to have spent your time.
Now, like I said, I missed the last 15 minutes. So there may be some more names to add to this list. But these were all the names that they gave the Sharknado.
Oh, yeah.
In order.
Well, here,
Sharknado.
To be clear,
what
it's because they named it all these things because the Sharknado this time the shtick was that the NATO kept picking up other things, and so then they would rename it.
Yeah,
and often with Al Roker, who I think had more lines than Ian Ziering,
possibly. And who was the chick with the eye patch?
It's one of those other morning news.
What happened to Matt Lauer?
I don't.
He's too good for Sharknado.
Did he get killed?
He may have been killed in the last one.
I don't remember.
Anyway. Sand NATO.
Yeah.
Boulder NATO.
There's rocks in that one.
Oil NATO.
Yeah.
Which quickly turned into Fire NATO.
When it could caught fire, yeah.
Then Lightning NATO.
Uh-huh.
Then it hit Yellowstone and became Lava NATO.
Uh-huh.
Then it went through a cow pasture in Kansas and became Cow NATO.
Yeah. That had a lot of cows in it. That was funny.
Yeah, yeah. It was like in Twister, but with several dozen cows.
Yeah.
Then it was Hail NATO briefly because they started running out of good names. And then it hit a nuclear power plant and became either Nuclear NATO or Nuke NATO, depending on
which cameo you asked.
Oh, and then my favorite line from the movie, which was from Tara Reid's father.
No, good Lord.
Played by
Gary Busey.
Yes. So Tara Reid's character, they all thought she was dead.
Right.
But he secretly, her father, Gary Busey, had faked her death and taken her back to his lab and turned her into a cyborg.
Basically, yeah. He's a mad scientist, yeah. Which is perfect for Gary Busey.
Right. So he's explaining this, and the daughter says, "But we had her ashes on our mantle." And Gary Busey says, "That's your dog. The ashes are your dog."
I'd like to point out that they managed to squeeze about 8 or 9 lines out of Gary Busey, which is, I think, is about all you can probably get from a 1 month shoot. Because they had him show up, and he had a few lines in the beginning, and then he showed up at the end with a few lines.
Yeah. Well, don't spoil the end for me yet. No, I have to go watch it.
Don't worry. Think of, here's your ending. More tornadoes and sharknadoes and all this kind of stuff. A bunch of people get their heads chopped off, because that's the only way you die when sharks attack you from the sky. Think of your favorite 2 Star Wars lines and just jam them. Just ram them into the dialogue. Just...
I noticed that.
With no attempt to try to subtly roll from one line to another. Just, we got to get to this line.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm done. Hi, Jim. How you doing?
It's all good. It's all good.
Oh, my God.
I was at a water park, so, you
good
know.
For you. Yeah, they went nuts with trying to just ram Star Wars lines into that movie.
I think the Sharknado hit a water park in Sharknado 2, didn't
he? He did. Did I mention that at water parks now, they have merged video games and water slides?
Oh, my God.
What?
You know, you can picture your average water slide. You're going down a tube, and it twists and it turns and all that stuff.
Right.
They now have a board that you dock at the bottom, log your name, and it's got 4 buttons. Think the Xbox controller.
Okay.
2 on the left side, 2 on the right side. As you go firing down the tube... they play the music of your choice, which you choose when you dock your board. And as you're going down, they will light up a portion of the tube, and you have to hit that button Simon-like to get it to match in time.
Oh, my Lord.
And when you get done, they will display the run that you just did, a la the Olympics, the score you achieved, and whether you unlocked the next level of difficulty.
Does that mean going to a bigger, longer slide?
No, it means the slide lights become more complicated and diverse.
Ah, I see. So, we have become, as a society, so unable to keep our focus and just enjoy something for a little while where we have to, you know, just this attention span problem that we have, AD.
I was so split on this, swing
down a water slide and just enjoy the watery goodness of the water slide.
It is insufficient that you are hurtling at unnatural rates down a plastic tube into the heavily chlorinated water at the bottom.
In a plastic tube that, mind you, could suddenly become devoid of water at any moment, and that could turn into a horror movie.
Yes. Yes.
As you come to a screeching halt. Yeah,
that's how my skin reacts to water tubes, whether there's water or not. Yeah. I just stick. I can't do them.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
No, and
Mike's
my
actually
son
an
loved
octopus.
It. Absolutely loved it. He had camouflaged. The pain of it is those boards are a little heavy for his lordship at the moment.
Oh.
So I wound up being Sherpa all the way all the way to the top of the tower for the 6 times he needed to do it. In a rapid succession. And let me tell you how much it hit his lizard brain in that he got to the bottom, saw he had not unlocked level 4, grabbed it with a ferocity I'd not seen him heretofore evince, and start marching straight up this thing with the board. And I'm going, you can't make it all the way up here with that board. I know. And he got to the top of the stairs, stopped, turned around, and I was just sort of padding after him. And he gave me a look that said, well?
Said, Dad, we're doing this.
Yes, it was. So there was that side, but I agree with you, Craig. It was last night after the Tall Ships Festival, they had a beautiful little modest firework display going on right here on the Fox River. And it just blew me away how many people were taking pictures of it with their cell phones.
Instead of watching it with their eyes.
The picture will suck.
Oh, yeah.
There is no way you can capture a firework on your Galaxy 7 or iPhones, whatever the hell you have. You can't. Would you just watch the damn thing?
They'll take decent video, but just not photos.
Yeah. just amazing. Yeah. But yeah, so I was not Sharknado-ing. I was hurtling down various water slides, some of which I will say are impressive creations. They've gone well past the simple tube into things that sort of beggar the imagination. And made, so two of them made me go, okay, that was cool. yeah, so that they're, and we were at the one that is notionally the world's largest water park, the Wilderness Resort here in the Dells.
Mm-hmm.
World's largest.
So it is alleged. They get rated all the time. I will say this place had 8 water parks within the confines of the resort. 2 of which were kids and 6 for all ages. And we made the route. I mean, it's sort of a Disney World of water parks.
Wet n Wild in Orlando also claims that.
Well, in Wet n Wild, where I've been when I was a lad, is certainly very, very big, so I don't know.
Well, if not the water park, at least Wisconsin has the largest bar.
Fair enough.
Of course we do. And if we didn't, we'd build it.
Mike, what's news?
The government has decided to lift the moratorium on cross-species chimera research. That's right.
was that a problem?
Human stem cells are going to be injected into animal embryos.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God. This is how it happens.
Start prepping.
Write it down.
Yeah.
Get to your favorite prepper website and just start racking up that credit card debt. You're not going to have to pay it off.
So who do we have to go back in time and kill eventually?
What?
Well, whoever this is, 100 years from now, we'll have to go back in time and kill them.
Yeah.
To prevent the apocalypse.
Well, it's one of those things that they always say, like, you know, if there will ever be time travel, like tomorrow, whoever just decided to start doing this suddenly disappears.
Suddenly dies.
Here we go. Carrie D. Wallenetz. That's the person you need to
put the vulture watch on this boy right there. There he is.
National Institute of Health's Associate Director for Science. Associate Director. Oh, this is just the spokes ape that they send out to tell
people.
Yeah,
I was going to say, don't we need to have somebody higher up the food chain deciding whether or not...
Well, whoever her boss is, that's the person you want to kill.
There's somebody hidden away in a bunker somewhere that, because of the time travelers.
Looks like Gary Busey.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Critics say that this is dangerous because it blurs the line between humans and other species.
Okay, no, it is not dangerous for any sort of moral, ethical reasons. It's dangerous because I've seen this show and it ends bad.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I watched Splice. It wasn't a very good movie. Although it did have good special effects.
That's the one that's got you worried, huh?
Yeah. No, I don't mind me. I'm worried about all sorts of things with things going wrong with animals and robots, and now they're gonna stick human stuff in animals. That sounds terrible.
About good medical news?
Please.
You don't have to floss anymore.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. It's all crap.
How am I off the hook?
Well, no. Common sense dictates that flossing is good for you.
It probably does something.
However, the government doesn't know one way or the other because they never actually studied it, even though they've been recommending it for all these years. So they finally looked. I don't know. Somebody was putting together a list of citations, and they were like, oh, hey, wait a minute.
So this is like...
There's no study on this.
So this is like halitosis, the word that was invented by Listerine.
Oh. Yeah,
this is so... My dentist, who I obey in all things oral, I'll move that forward. She tells me that she would rather I flossed than anything else I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That she's like, don't this brushing your teeth, this the rinsing, the gargles, all that, forget it. Floss. That is her big thing. So this is wow.
Well, even without, you know, having a medical or a dental degree or whatever.
Yeah, hello.
We know brushing is good for you, right? Because it doesn't get rid of the plaque. It just disperses it.
Right.
It's still there, the bacteria and all that.
Well,
it just gets rid of a lot of it and then moves it around so it's not sitting there in one place doing its damage.
Right.
So if brushing is good for you because for that reason, that and flossing takes care of the parts of your teeth that brushing doesn't reach, it would make sense that flossing would also be good for you for the same reason, right?
Right. And if for no other reason, you know, your dental professional says that if you do one thing, floss, it's because what's going on in between your teeth would be harder to patch up.
Well, they have
than
to,
anything else.
Yeah. In order to patch that up, they have to drill out all the good parts of your teeth.
Right. But if
unless you're or guy with the giant penis,
Liam Neeson.
No, John Hamm. No, the guy with the gaps in his teeth.
Oh, Willem Dafoe.
Thank you.
Who can floss with Baylor twine? With his pinky finger.
To shoelaces.
But no, it's just like, you know, if you're going to do something, you get the stuff out from in between the teeth, because at the very least, you know, then you can just get the fronts and backs and molar faces.
With your tongue.
Oh, you can get that shellacked with, you know, fillings at some point if you need to, whereas in between the teeth is tough. Anyway. Hey, Mike, actually, Jim, question for you. Have you watched American Horror Story at all?
No, I have not.
Okay, but you know that it's an anthology series. Every season they do a different story.
Oh, yes. And
they repeat, you know, a certain number of, you know, some of the actors get repeated and they pop up back here and there.
Please don't say Lady Gaga's coming back. Lady
Gaga's coming back.
Damn it.
That's been on the docket for like months, since like the week after the last season wrapped up. But here's the kicker. In previous seasons, Mike, you know that they announced you got a glimpse of what the theme of the next season was going to be a lot earlier than now. They've been sitting on this one.
I don't had when is it supposed to start? And I don't know.
Well, it'll start probably in like early October.
So it's a regular fall series. Okay. Yeah.
And usually we know what the theme of the season is going to be.
You
like
insist.
2 months ago,
they
finally revealed it for season 6.
Oh, why were they holding on? I think
Well, I think they got tired of people bitching for that. You know, how much longer? Just keep it under wraps and let it be a surprise, and you know they don't have to deal with the PR as much.
Yeah. Well, if they're going to tell you ahead of time, what does it matter how far ahead of time it is? They're still spoiling it.
They're shaving months of PR bullshit off that they don't have to deal with. But they've revealed it. So
what is it?
Are you ready for everybody in black and buckles?
Black.
And does the word Croatoan mean anything to you?
They're going to be Puritans.
They're going.
Whoa, way back.
Disappearing colony.
They're going to be
Roanoke.
Really? Whoa. Wow.
Yeah. So.
So they're going to tell us. They're going to tell us the true story of what happened to the lost colony of Roanoke.
Right. The one that we kind of have figured out now, anyway.
You mean they walked over there and lived with the Indians until they died off?
That one?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure American Horror Story, that won't be the story. It's like, it'll be 12 episodes of them hanging out in their village, and then one day they just get up and move. Yes. In the 13th episode.
You know what? Those natives over there seem to be having a much better time of it than this bull. Let's go over there.
And then they'll
I always wonder why you weren't coming over here.
And then there'll be a flash forward to a year later when that boat shows up and everybody goes, hey, where'd they go? And then, you know,
and it's a
credit.
Secret message. No, it just said we went over there.
Well, admittedly, that was a crappy message. One word, really.
Well, it was pretty clear.
They couldn't have put an arrow on that tree. Even if they're not going to write a full message on a piece of paper, they couldn't put an arrow on the tree. They had time.
I'm going to defend them. It's like, you know what? I'm guessing that in every other sort of environmental challenge they were facing, the ink, quill, and pen system had been running a little dry.
Okay, fine.
So they carved Croatoan. We're the people. It's what we do today.
With an arrow.
We don't have some elaborate system of Chicago, 20 miles. Remember, turn left just before Old Time Road.
I'm not
then
saying.
Turn right. No, it says Chicago 20 miles.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Bear with him here.
Like over 20 slashes.
Sure.
That they have to put in that tree. More. They couldn't do three more. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's what it's going to be. So, yeah, everybody in black and buckles. or however they're, or they'll show the people like what they normally actually wore, because the black and buckles was their formal attire and they actually just wore regular clothes.
Yeah.
They wore, you know, admittedly earth tones, and but they wore jewelry and all this stuff, you know, adornments and things.
So they'll be killed by some sort of angry manatee.
They won't be doing their farming in black and white and buckles. Anyway, anything else from there, Mike?
How about more medical news?
Oh, good. Mike suddenly got louder over there, Jim.
Yeah, I don't know. There we go.
Better.
Hey, do you like to fidget?
All the time.
Do you like to fidget with your legs and your feet?
I have no choice.
Okay.
I've got a touch of neuropathy in my feet, so they're always a little tingly. It helps if I move my feet around a little bit.
I just naturally fidget for whatever reason.
I'm a fidgety person, too. Always have been.
I don't have that reason, but yeah. So I don't have a reason.
Jim, are you fidgety?
No, I'm actually not. Well, I started drinking at a young age. It soothes such impulses.
Well, you might want to start.
Uh-oh.
Because scientists have determined that toe tapping or otherwise fidgeting with your legs is good for you.
Okay.
In what way?
Keeps those blood clots away?
It helps prevent arterial dysfunction caused by too much sitting.
Ah.
I believe that.
Yes, the more you sit, the less blood flow goes through your legs. The less blood flow that goes through your legs, the more your arteries and veins and other vascular tubules.
That's not a thing.
Quiet, you.
Slowly disintegrate.
Sure.
I've discussed my plantar fasciitis on this show before.
You have.
And they give you a ball. It's a therapy ball. It's a tennis ball that you put under your feet, and yes, you roll it back and forth to sort of work that. So I suppose that makes sense.
So yeah, so fidget more.
Reported as news. Yeah. Moving helps your body live longer.
Uh-huh. Well, no, if you're gonna sit
all
day in front of the computer and the TV and whatever, and not actually get up and exercise or move around at all, like I do.
So hold your pee in, so that kind of gives you a reason to, you know, kind of dance in your
jump
seat
around.
Little.
Yeah.
Not too long, because you
holding
can die.
Your pee in?
Yeah, not too long.
Because you could die from that?
Yeah.
You die from that before you wet yourself?
I don't know.
Oh, man, what comes first, renal failure or the accident?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going there. I'm not going to be your guinea pig on this one.
Depends on your bladder and your prostate if you're a guy.
So I'm stepping back.
Well, this is like, you know, a couple of weeks ago with how much pot has to be dissolved in your water before you'll, you know,
overdose on it.
Will you get high from the pot first or die from drinking too much water?
Yeah.
It's kind of like one of those you don't want to know the answer.
Hey, Packer fans, did we see the Brett Favre Hall of Fame display news?
No.
Oh, you're going to love
Hall
this.
Hall of Fame display.
Yeah, they do like the Hall of Fame display.
Right, they do
what looks like, and it looks like a locker room. And it's, here's your locker area. It's just that you know, cubby area.
So it's not going to be 100% Packer gear?
No, of course not. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a bunch of Vikings crap in there.
Because he was there for 2 years.
Yeah.
But no Jet stuff, because he was only there for 1 year.
And they won a division championship, and he was there for 2 years. Whereas he was with the Packers for 14, and we got to one Super
16.
Bowl. 16, and then he had one and one of other places. There's going to be Viking stuff in there.
Awesome.
The jersey that's going to be in there, I think, is the one that he broke the consecutive starts record in.
Yeah.
And the Packer jersey is one of the ones that he broke some other record in.
I think you guys know I appear on a radio show. We actually are a radio show now because they got a low power license here called the Packerverse. And I have argued and I continue to argue the whole Vikings thing is forgiven because the fates spoke emphatically. That second, the first season with the Vikings, he has the greatest, inarguably the greatest season of his career.
Didn't win a Super Bowl, doesn't count.
Exclusively for the purpose of hurting Ted Thompson and Mark Murphy.
And that, my friend, is why I will never forgive him.
But But you must remember, and I will insist that the technological gods of the Nerdburger podcast find the play call from the Detroit, from the Minnesota, is, I believe it's Paul Allen. Paul Allen's call of the game against the Saints, where all Favre had to do with time winding down on the clock.
Hold on.
Looking for it.
This call to take that team that the Packers so despise, because I was sitting here going, had they gone to the Super Bowl, there would be no forgiving him. I would boo him on the field. I would stand 3 feet from his face and shout, boo, you suck, boo. But because this happens, the fates looked at him and said, we gave you everything. We gave you this season. You beat the Packers twice, but this happened to you. And you never could close it. And he's got to live with this the rest of his life. He has to live with this call the rest of his life.
Hey, you know what? He doesn't care.
I strongly disagree.
No.
Brett Favre is, I'm going to say it, because, and I love the guy because he took my team to greatness.
One Super Bowl.
Not being this is not critical to my love of a quarterback. What is critical is trophies, Lombardi trophies.
One, yeah, very good.
He brought me a trophy.
One.
He is a douchebag.
Yeah.
Okay? He is a galactic douchebag. The stories have come out that after Packer games, he would go out and see what other players had done that day to see whether they were keeping up with his stats. The fact that Peyton Manning broke his touchdown record galls him beyond his power to reason. The fact that Peyton Manning broke his yards completed record bugs him like crazy, which means the only records he has left that are of any significance are the streak, which will never be broken, not in today's NFL, and interceptions. So, oh, no, no, he cares. He cares a ton. Now, he's got millions and millions of dollars, the wife he cheats on, and all this other stuff.
I think he cares more that he stuck it to Ted Thompson.
I guess that's the way I'm looking at this. But this ending is not what you want. Peyton Manning got the ending Favre wanted.
Good. Thrilled.
Yeah. Good for Peyton Manning.
I'll sleep better every single day for the rest of my days because that douchebag didn't get what he wanted.
That's right. I actually think that matters to him. Like I say,
hold on, hold on.
Scheme of things, he's got a billion times more dollars than we do. All that other stuff. By Tracy Porter, near side to the 40, and John Sullivan runs him down at the 47-yard line. You've got to be kidding me! I can't believe what I just saw.
Looking at that play, he should have just held on to a ball. He should have. He could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards if he would have just pulled that thing down and dove forward.
But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
That's Craig. That's my ringtone for Craig. For when he calls me.
Every time he picks up the phone quickly, I'm surprised because I know how much he likes listening to that whole thing.
It wouldn't play the whole thing. Yeah. He would go to voicemail way before.
Brett Favre lives with that call the rest of his life. And he does care. Because to get yelled at, to get called incompetent for the exact thing that everybody said you were so great for. Boy, he's a gunslinger, man. Come on, man. This is a guy who's going to go out there and throw the ball around, but he's going to win you a Super Bowl. No, he won't. No, he won't. And Packer fans, we are so absurdly spoiled by the precision, the mastery of Aaron Rodgers, that there's a whole generation that's quickly going to forget that while Favre did some incredible things, God almighty, he could be bad.
Oh, yeah.
No, I haven't.
That's the interception record.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So now, you know what? He wants to put that Minnesota stuff in there. That's fine. Everybody knows he's a Packer. And the fact is that he came back with all his glory and all his honors, having choked away. Ask any Minnesota fan. Ask them who they blame for that not going to the Super Bowl. Ask them what they think about Favre's time in Minnesota. The only reason they care one bit, why they remember it for a moment, is because they know it pisses us off.
Moving on. Do we want to take a quick look at discontinued Olympic sports? Sounds like Jim's in. Mike, how about you?
I may have heard a few of these, but sure.
Okay, how about the swimming obstacle race?
Oh, why did that fail?
It's a 200-meter race. They had to swim up, swim to a pole, climb up and down the pole, then swim a bit, clamber over two boats, swim under two more boats, swim to the finish line. And it was done once in 1900.
And okay, that's a 1900 kind of. I could see.
Well, that. Most of these are these. You know, a lot of these are, you know, 800 years ago. It's when they were just like they wanted to make the Olympics bigger, but they didn't have like they hadn't invented. Well, yeah, it's a lot of hit and miss. Mm-hmm. You know, inventing new sports, sure. It's a lot of hit and miss.
Trial and error. What you just described sounds like that game show, that Nickelodeon thing they're bringing back, Double Dare.
Right.
Just add some boogers and some slime.
Distance plunging.
That's not a sport. That's what happens on a daily basis as a result of gravity.
It was only one time in 1904. Competitors would dive into a pool and remain motionless for 60 seconds or until their head bobbed up out of the water, after which the distance that they dove was measured. It was like they couldn't propel themselves further. It looks like they could just like dive in and however far down they went is how far down they went.
So the bigger you were and the heavier you were, the better your chances.
Well, you also...
So this was nothing but like a bunch of really big dudes?
Hello?
No, because you had to have... you had to be able to hold your breath.
You're gonna wait on me?
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
You had to be able to hold your breath. Big dudes go down there, hold their breath for 15 seconds, and then start scrambling for the surface.
I thought it was a... Yeah.
I imagine it helps to only partially inflate your lungs just enough to sink further and have just enough air and then come back up.
Yeah.
That's... Wow. I'd watch that. I'd watch it.
One time, yeah. You'd spend 2 hours one evening just watching plunging?
Absolutely. Especially now with underwater camera technology.
The best Olympic sports are the ones with the greater chance of death.
Right there, sure.
Also in 1904, the an American variation of the French croquet. Is this roque or roquet? Probably roque. It doesn't have a T at the end.
Yeah, it'd be roque then, yeah.
Yeah, that was done.
Exciting.
It was virtually unknown outside of all the U.S. All of the competitors were American. All the medals.
Oh.
Well, but don't we still have a little of that? I mean, isn't that the joke behind the Jamaican bobsled team? There are certain things that you're just not going to be able to compete in.
Yeah. This is the one that I would totally watch. Tug of war.
It offends me on an annual... I've made this case. I have ranted on this. Where is the tug of war in the damn Olympics?
Yeah, the seven man, just big dudes, just tugging on the rope.
Now, have you seen battle. The videos from the Philippines on this?
No.
just be steady. I don't know if they're still on YouTube. It's been years since I've gone looking.
Do they compete?
There used to be videos of the unfortunate effect of Philippines tug of wars with guys having wrapped the rope around their arms.
Is getting degloved.
Something and it terrible. Resulted in all sorts of, let's just call them injuries.
Yeah.
Yikes.
In the Philippines, yeah, I'll have to check my cable provider and see if I have PSPN. See if I can watch Filipino sports.
But yeah, tug of war done right. That's a true Olympic sport. Besides, everybody could compete.
Yeah.
Who the hell doesn't have rope?
Rope and strong people. That's all it takes.
Well, no, you don't need strong. You don't have to win at it. You just need a rope.
You want to put up a bit of a fight, you know. Have like, okay, seven people on the team, have four strong people.
Can you imagine the Maori haka that they would do in advance of a tug of war?
The what?
Huh?
The Maori people.
Right.
In the South Pacific, they're the ones that do the heavy tattooing over their chests and face and things.
Sure.
And their rugby team is famous for their ritual dances that they do before a match. They're called a haka. And you'll find them all over YouTube. And they're just so cool. Because, hey, this is a group of people getting up for something. And they're usually really big dudes.
How about dueling pistols? Now, they were shooting at mannequins.
Oh,
in fancy clothes. Yeah, that's why it only lasted 1 year in 1912.
I was in.
1 year.
This obvious necessary change was made.
Who won that one gold medal in
It doesn't say,
pistols?
Unfortunately. Yeah. I'd have to dig.
That'd be a rare gold medal.
Live pigeon shooting. That wouldn't fly today. Yeah, live. Not clay pigeons.
Not for long, they ain't.
Yeah. Synchronized solo swimming, solo synchronized swimming, where it's just you and the music.
That's
you're
boring.
Saying synchronized to the music.
Yeah, well, that's what synchronized is. It's just synchronized to the other swimmers, but also to the music.
Okay,
it's,
well,
it's
see,
a dance.
I actually,
it's a dance.
You taught me something this morning. I did not know that you were synchronized to the music. I assumed you were synchronized one to another. Although, of course, notionally to the music. Otherwise, it'd look a bit absurd. But
yeah, otherwise, it just look like, you know, freeform jazz dancing.
Jazz Odyssey.
Yeah, that's how we have to do it. You have to do this, the solo synchronized swimming, but in the like the indigenous musical style of your country. So the Americans don't ever have to really learn how to synchronize. It's like I was just doing a jazz solo out there the
man,
whole time.
That was just
man.
Like my jazz odyssey. It was an improv. You know?
Roller hockey happened once in '92 in Barcelona. They did hockey on the gym
that.
Floor with
really
rollerblades. Yep,
I remember that.
What else they got? Did you guys remember any rope climbing? Just straight up rope climbing, like you climb the rope in gym class. That was the thing. Just climb up to the rope as fast as you can. No,
well,
no, not to the rope, just the rope.
Fencing is gone.
Fencing gone.
My understanding.
I don't know.
See fencing? I think it's gone.
I don't know.
So it's, you know, and obviously there's this evolution over time, but those are some fine sports. Do we have water polo? I assume we do.
I was watching water polo before I came over here.
Very
why?
Good.
Because I was curious as to what was on, so I just flipped to NBC to just see what
and that
there
was.
Was
what was on.
And that's what it was, and I watched for 5 minutes, and then I got ready and came over.
Cruel to the horse, but, you know.
How much garbage was floating in the water? Any dead body parts?
I don't remember what countries were playing, so.
Any live body parts?
Yeah, there was no, there wasn't anything like the beach volleyball beach where a foot and another unidentified body part washed up on the shore meters away from where they would be. Beach volleyballing.
Well, that's a foot. Mm-hmm. That other thing, I have no idea what that is.
Well, the Onion, as it must do, came out with the headline overnight. Brazilian dancers in Rio attempt to incorporate spewing sewage into routine.
What is it with this? The Olympics thing is like, you know, China had all that, you know, your public urination that they had to try to clean up, and there's smog everywhere.
No, rejuvenating mist.
He called it rejuvenating mist. Yeah.
there are smog. Only so many countries that are right now set up to really manage this in a credible way, and we should just let them do it for God's sake, for the benefit of everybody involved.
What was the big deal in Russia? It was
Sochi. Sochi. The problem was the construction.
Yeah, they didn't finish
anything.
They were following
Russian building standards.
Yeah, they didn't finish a bunch of stuff. Like, people moved into their hotel rooms and they didn't have, like, fixtures in the bathroom.
That's the problem now.
Well, no, but that...
At the current one,
right,
too.
But that was the big problem in Russia. That's kind of the minor problem in Rio.
Yeah. Well,
they have so many other worse problems.
Did you see the great bit between the Australian team and the president? Does the Rio have a president or prime minister?
They have an interim president because the other one is under indictment.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. There you go. But the Australians came in and complained about the lack of water in their rooms and the state.
Drinking water?
Running water. And the subpar bedding and everything. And the president, or maybe it was just some smarmy official that got in here, made some comment about, said, if it'll make you feel more at home, we'll put a kangaroo in each of your rooms.
Wow. Really?
Not from the Onion.
Wow.
For real. Yeah.
There's somebody who's fed up with dealing with all these problems.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do? Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
How was Origins?
I was, when we talked last, I was on my way,
mm-hmm.
And went out. It's a great show. I mean, we all know, well, as we're recording this, Gen Con is going on. And Gen Con is an insane experience. It's wonderful. Everybody should go, but it's like being in a blender. Origin is much more like what Gen Con was when it was in Milwaukee, and before that, it's much more low-key and all that. The one thing I wanted to observe, and this is just something that maybe I'm throwing a stick in the ground for my own people about, was there's a lot of debate going on inside the community as to what's going on with historical wargaming. And it's interesting. I mean, Dungeons & Dragons comes from historical wargaming originally. And there was once a ton of it coming out of Wisconsin, out of Lake Geneva, out of this area right here. And crawling around Origins, it's really heading to the margins. Origins is going success to success. It was a great show. It was a fun show. But it's all board games now. Board games and RPGs. And as a guy who's into both of those things, that's really cool. But I've been really spending a lot of time thinking lately about whether or not this hobby that I grew up with, I mean, I've been playing historical board games since 1979. And while there are certainly people playing them and there are certainly people getting together online to play them, they certainly were not there in evidence at Origins. And that was a little strange. I mean, there were some, but they were certainly not the majority of what was going on. And but we had a good time. I was there representing a group that was a historical board gaming group. And we had a lot of friends by and we had a lot of people by. But the crowds were good. The crowds were big. But again, I'll tell folks, anybody, if you've done Gen Con and it's getting a little crazy for you, Origins is a great alternative. It's still a whole jillion games going on. And just a time to hang out and relax.
I'm leaning heavily toward doing that over Gen Con in the future.
And I will say this, that you can actually go and have food at various places, and it's available. The only thing they did this year that was a strange choice, they decided that they're, because I think Origins is their biggest convention, the Columbus Exhibition Center in the heart of downtown Columbus, decided that this would be the time during their biggest convention to do their renovations that included their food court.
Oh boy.
So all it was a weird wall of construction, and you could get food, but there was no place to sit.
Ugh.
So that did not go well.
That's like Dragon Con. No place to sit for anything.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, I sort of want to teach a class or get these guys into a room and go, is it your intent not to let people sit down? Because if it is, you're succeeding admirably.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the logic is. But other than that, absolutely loved it.
Well, it's unhealthy.
It was a great time.
If you give people places to sit, you have to force them to tap their toes the whole time.
Is that it? Is that it? Mm-hmm. They want me
then
to
you
be
have
healthy.
To have, you have
they
to have
don't
monitors.
Want my feet to atrophy, so they're moving me from place to place with my plate of pot thai.
Yeah.
And they need to, they'll have to hire all these extra monitors to kind of, keep an eye on people's foot tapping.
Yeah, but human beings are like water, and we will follow the course of least resistance. This is why geniuses think, hey, this space is open, and they don't wonder why it's not, and then they get a parking ticket, right? But it was the same thing at Origins. We left the food court where there were no seats, and we went to the place where there were seats, which just so happens to be right in the middle of the lobby of the really nice convention center. So we're sitting around like a bunch of hobos eating our pod thai plates in the middle of people drifting back and forth for various conventions. And I said, this is not the fault of the conventioneers. This is the fault of the people that didn't think chairs and tables were important to a restaurant area.
Uh-huh. Mike, you want to go to Origins next year?
No.
Okay. Why not? You'll have to I'll look be for there. Somebody we'll else. Hang out.
Well,
I
tried
to
convince
you from the preferred pad thai place.
It's an awfully long way to go for pad thai and just to hang out with friends,
Well, we're not going for the pad thai. That's just bonus.
That's
well, what are you going for, Craig?
The gaming.
Yeah, the thing that I don't do.
Well, you can do at Origin. You can binge on it and not have to do any more for a whole year.
Yeah, I'm just doing fine not doing any at all.
Wow.
Okay. Can I say, by the way, I know we discussed this on the last show.
No
the,
capers the playtesting for you. Culver's.
No, I'll playtest.
Oh, my God.
What about Culver's? What now? What?
Culver's?
Yeah.
They are ridiculous in the Northwoods of Wisconsin.
Really?
I couldn't believe it. I mean, we've got some. I mean, we've got three, I think, down where I live. But it's like I'm driving down the highway to get here, and we stop. I'm not making this up. We stopped in Oshkosh to eat at Culver's because my son likes to eat there.
Who doesn't?
We get on the highway, and we're driving here to Green Bay, and it says 6 miles. Stop at Culver's. There's one right there. And I keep going past that one, and it says 9 miles, Culver's. Yeah. And I get off in Green Bay, Culver's this way. It was amazing. So whatever it is, whatever voodoo doll you're rubbing, just make sure that they keep pointing it south. Because at this rate, they're going to take over Manitoba first.
It's on the way down here.
There's two right now open here. And two more coming, and they still aren't showing the one that you talked about in Canton.
Well, that was just announced.
Sure,
it takes time. What else have we got for today?
I got a thing. I got a thing from Samuel Pepys.
Oh, do we have time for Sammy?
It's a short one.
Of course we do.
Okay, let's
okay, because
let's hear from Sammy.
As Pepys. I do my as I do my standard introduction. Samuel Pepys, 17th century diarist, highly placed official in the government of Charles II, 17th century. We chuck the deuce. And so we read, and we've been taking out little pieces from his diary, I should say. And we are, and we're going to grab this one. What I am doing is trying very, very hard to keep us up to date with Sam whenever I call in. And in this case, we are reading from the 21st of September, 1660.
Were the Olympics going on in 1660? Was that an Olympics year?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so. I'd have to check.
Okay.
I'm sure somebody was playing tug of war, though, or climbing
That's
a rope.
True. Somewhere out in the streets of London, you bet your life somebody was playing tug of war. 22nd September. Llewellyn and I walked to Fleet Street, where, at Mr. Standing's in Salisbury Court, we drank our morning draft and had a pickled herring.
Yum.
Among the others, so that's his morning snack, beer, a beer and a pickled herring.
Fish. Moving on.
Among the other discourse, he told me how the pretty woman that I had always loved at the beginning of Cheapside,
sells
children's coats, was served by that Lady Bennet, a famous strumpet, who by counterfeiting to fall into a swoon upon the sight of her in her shop, became acquainted with her, and at last got her ends of her to lie with a gallant that had hired her to procure that poor soul for him. So, the story, as narrated...
Yeah, please translate.
I'm not sure what happened.
Somebody pretended to faint.
And then I lost it after that.
And somebody got it on.
Yeah.
This is a couple fellas now.
Right.
Yeah. This is Llewellyn and Sam.
Right.
It's Lou and Sam. it's Lou and Sam over beer and pickled herring, which, you know, could be anywhere in the Northwest Wisconsin.
I'd like to point out that
that's
is
on the
his,
Culver's menu, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
it's his morning draft.
Yeah.
So that's your wakey wakey.
Uh-huh.
You can't, wakey wakey
you
eggs
can't,
and herring.
You can't drink all day if you don't start when you wake up.
A little hair of the dog there. Yeah. Yeah,
little herring of the dog.
Hey, episode title.
and Lou says to Sam, "Hey, Sam, remember that girl you like in the cheap side that sells coats? Yeah. That whore."
Strumpet.
No, apparently this whore hooks up with a gallant. I like that he calls him a gallant. And the gallant convinces the whore to faint in the pretty maid shop. And when she faints, the lady, the maid helps the whore. And they become friends. And over time, the maid convinces the girl, the strumpet convinces the maid to sleep with the guy that hired her in the first place. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So did she get a cut of that or
get a commission?
Absolutely.
Finder's
10%.
10%.
She was a pimp.
10% of ass.
She was
moving
a pimp.
Up, moving up in the world. Yeah.
Pimps up.
She's pimped up. That's my point. So this is two fellas meeting over beer and herring.
That's your morning conversation.
Yeah.
To talk about how this gal that, let's face it, Sam probably wanted to do, because that was his thing.
Yeah.
Because he says he loved her. And that's what Sam means when he says he loves you. It means he wants to do you.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Is that Lou's like, hey, Sam, sorry. You know that gal you liked in Cheapside that sold children's coats? Yeah, she slept with some hot guy because like this old whore helped her out. Helped her out. It's like, this was your morning conversation on 22nd September 1660.
Well, they didn't have the Olympics, Jim.
or football. Yeah.
And I just, don't you want to film it? Don't you want to film the scene of the old hooker? In the shop, like looking at kids' coats. Why is she looking at kids' coats? There is no reason for her to be looking at kids' coats. No. But she is. And all of a sudden she's like, oh dearie me.
Where is your fainting couch?
She's pimping this girl to this guy.
Yeah. She's recruiting.
Yeah, she's not the recruiting. So again, and so Lou has to break the bad news to his guy Sam that yeah, this girl's no longer.
Aw.
Oh, poor Sammy. He'll have to get it on with his servant girl who he had his hand all up in her business when his wife walked in from like 2 years ago. That was one of the first stories you brought us.
It was the first story.
The wife walked in the middle of them. I believe the word cunny was used.
Yeah. Yes. Manu su robes.
Yes. Wow.
So yeah, that's our guy, Sam, for 22nd September 1660.
Well, thank you, Jim. I got a question for you. This is something else you brought up, and we jumped to Sammy quick here because we were just gunning for it. We wanted more Sammy peeps.
Sure.
But as has been mentioned on the show, excuse me.
Bless you.
You're a fan of the Muppets and puppets in general.
Yes.
And we've talked about the Muppet Show and its older incarnation and its more recent one. But you also said something you have something to say about Sesame Street, which is also very Muppety in its own right.
Oh man, yeah. You probably all saw this story. I mean, I was aware that the children's television workshop is a corrupt institution. Okay, never let that be denied. These are individuals that have made millions and millions of dollars.
More like children's
marketing of one of the most popular sets of intellectual property on the planet.
Children's television sweatshop.
That's the one. And so my sympathies are a little bit mixed here, but nobody doubts that Sesame Street is this iconic, seminal thing in the history of children's television and in television generally. And so they go over to HBO, and the first thing they say is, we're going to a half an hour. It's like, well, no, that's the exact opposite. One of the things about Sesame Street, I don't know if you've ever noticed it, is it's got this incredibly mellow, careful, slow pace.
Sure.
What's the hurry? In order to reach kids, you don't get them hyper. You mellow them out. You watch a show. You do an activity. Even think about the songs we all remember. There's a tone to them. They flow from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, that thing, all the way to much more relaxed things. They were very sensitive to that. So gunning it to a half hour, big mistake. But then the news came out about a week ago that they were firing Bob, Luis, and...
What?
And who? Gordon. And Gordon. That they were firing Bob, Luis, and Gordon.
All the old guys?
All the
running them out of Dodge.
The remainders of...
The original human cast.
Of freaking Sesame Street people.
Yeah.
This was a diverse cast when TV didn't know what diversity was. And they were diverse in the best way, which is, these are just people in my neighborhood. Why? What's your deal? These are just people I know. And they're funny and they sing and they play with us. They're my friends. They're my mentors. They're good people. That's all. They were not... Bob wasn't, you know, the white guy. Luis wasn't the Hispanic guy. Gordon wasn't the black guy. They were just people in your neighborhood. That was the genius of it. And for God's sake, Bob, most people don't realize this, Bob is over 80 years old.
Yeah, what's he going to do now?
Well, it's like, are you mental? Are you mental? These people are Sesame Street. They get the gig. They are the ones who know where everybody is buried, how this show works, how you do it. Oh, no, we got to run them out. There was apparently such a huge hue and cry that they've now walked back that decision.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's like, you fired me. You fired me. I see. You fired me. Now look who is back. But it is just amazing to me how even in the, you know, it, notionally we're supposed to trust capitalism because it's money and people are careful and people are guardians of resources. It is clear to me that at times like this, that there are occasions when capitalists just don't even understand the products they're trying to pitch. And I could not believe that you would run, again, Bob Luison, seriously? You would, I mean, obviously Mr. Hooper's dead.
Well, and that whole thing was handled famously.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
When he died, they didn't shy away from it, and they had to explain it to Big Bird on the show. And mm-hmm. they gave it, you know, did a very sensitive.
They did explaining to a kid what death was.
It means that they're gone and they're not coming back, and they had to kind of get the point across to Big Bird, and Big Bird was sad, and they said it was okay to be sad, but mm-hmm. we'll all remember him. And he'll stay alive that way. And they made a big thing out of it. And that was huge.
And hopefully Big Bird, you know, didn't shock Big Bird so much that his personality splintered yet again into another weird creature that no one else could see.
Well, but taking that theme that Craig just raised, remember what a big deal it was when finally an adult had to see Mr. Snuffleupagus, because there were people who were afraid that kids faced with sexual abuse or other traumatic situations wouldn't feel they would be believed if they came out and said something is happening.
Yeah.
And so they had to come out and have an adult see, meet, and believe a child when he told the truth about Mr. Snuffleupagus, the child in that case being Big Bird.
Mm-hmm.
Because despite his size, the irony of the implicit irony in Big Bird or the contrast is he is a kid.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
He's a very young kid.
Yeah, he's a 5-year-old.
Right. And so he had to be believed. Just think about what we just said. These were two national narrative stories that centered on a kid's show because it's that important.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're HBO, don't you sit down with the people who built it, who made it from nothing and turned it into this phenomenon, and say, what did you do that was genius? What did you do that worked? What didn't work? How did you fail over the course of the last 3 decades?
Right.
Well, 3 decades, 4.
Do you
how did you fail? You know,
if you're going to buy a property like that, do you not do your research on it? Do you not know why you're buying this property? Why it's so important? Why it's worth it?
Right. And it's just, and the other really big thing about it, at the guts of it, it's an urban show with a positive message. Sesame Street is not in some idyllic neighborhood.
Oh, no. It's dirty. Look,
it's dirty. There's a trash can sitting right there with a grouch inside. You know, and there's walk-ups and there's stoops that people sit on and a corner grocer. And it's, yeah, it's safe. It's a safe place for kids. But it's a place they could look at and identify. Urban kids. And as I was a suburban kid, I identified with it. I liked it. And so the notion that HBO would come along and try a stunt like that is just, it goes to the third rule of bureaucromancy. Always be the person with the courage in the room to raise their hand and say, does anybody else think this is a really stupid idea?
Or am I the only one?
Yeah, am I the only one? Am I the only one that thinks this is really dumb? And I'm glad I think it's going to have a happier ending. But you're right. You're absolutely right, Mike. I mean, this is one of those things that's like, okay, now we're in an awkward place. But yeah, I mean, Sesame Street, it had always been a hard property to transition because it did have such loyalty from its performers, from the people that were in it, for its writers. So yes, all these people are going to die. They're going to be unable to perform. I get that. But, you know, how many famous musicians have showed up and performed on Sesame Street? It runs into the hundreds, I would think. One of my personal favorite being Norah Jones singing "I Don't Know Why Didn't Come,"
I don't think I've seen that episode.
No,
okay.
It's you know her song. Right. I don't know why you didn't come. She just turned it around, so she was missing her friend, the letter Y.
Oh. I thought that was where you were going with that, okay. But I was like, I'm not familiar with it.
Don't want to commit to that.
No.
I'm not 100% on
that. Do you mean the letter Y?
And of course, you've all seen Game of Chairs.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that went viral, so.
There are some things that they've done that have shown their ability to adapt to a modern environment, the viral environment, create all these things. But at its guts, it's got to be about these people and about their interaction with this world. And yeah, I hope we've dodged a bullet here because I very much want Sesame Street to endure.
Just a quick side note regarding another older fellow associated with Sesame Street. Do you guys know who Garrett Brown is?
Nope.
I learned about Garrett Brown this week. He's a cinematographer and cameraman. He was working at a time in mid-70s. Mostly he was doing commercials and then short films for Sesame Street.
Okay.
That's kind of his bread and butter at the time. And he got really irritated with the limitations of the camera, the crane shot and the dolly shot. So he invented the Steadicam.
Whoa, really? Okay.
Yes. A few tidbits about this, and you can dig up the information on him and you can find some of this stuff. His name is Garrett Brown, G-A-R-R-E-T-T Brown. And he, you know, what we know the Steadicam to be with the harness and the arm and, you know, the counterweight at the bottom and all that. And that, you know, it hasn't really changed much other than becoming technologically more advanced where they put the monitor right on the thing. And
sure,
you can do all that with digital cameras. But he, there were, you know, going into him inventing that, there were a number of different types of shots that cameramen referred to collectively as impossible shots. These are things you simply can't do with a camera and with the modern apparatus at the time with cranes and dollies, because the cranes and dollies are just too big to be able to do certain types of things. And then there's other stuff you can't do simply because now you're suddenly going to see the dolly track.
Sure.
You can't turn around as you dolly because you don't want to see the track.
Right. Or you don't want to build some overly complex track system to get a swoopy shot.
You simply can't, because the dolly on top of it, the dolly, the thing that rides on the track, is a big hunk of,
sure,
it's like a little train car thing. It's huge.
Yeah.
So he put together the whole thing, and he built it, you know, pretty simply out of bits and, you know, just stuff that he had lying around. He basically cobbled it together, and he put together on his camera back in the mid-70s a series of 30 impossible shots. And then he sent that out to Hollywood.
Wow.
And it was perhaps the first thing that has ever gone viral in Hollywood. Within weeks, everybody who made movies had seen it.
Yeah.
And he sent it to a few.
And this was people dubbing videotape and probably beta and mailing it or hand delivering it.
However it was dealt with. Well, what happened was, here's one of the killers, is that one of the first people that got a hold of it, when there was just like one copy that was just getting handed from person to person, was Kubrick. And Kubrick, because Kubrick is Kubrick, examined it in great detail. And he wrote a letter to the guy saying,
"I know what you did."
Essentially. And this is what Kubrick did. He said, "In this shot and in this shot, you can briefly see the shadow of what appears to be the camera, a pole, and some other large apparatus dangling at the end of the pole. I suggest you remove those frames before you circulate this film further."
Yeah.
And so he went out and cut 12 frames or 14 frames or something like that. Yeah. Kubrick found the 14 frames in the 30 shots that allowed you to see the shadow of the Steadicam.
Yeah.
So he clipped that stuff out and then reset the thing out. So nobody else saw it. And, you know, some of the shots that you got, and what he did was recently, this is just worth noting, that he, a little while back, a couple years ago, he managed to digitize 10 of those shots from his original film reel. And so you can go and look for Garrett Brown impossible shots. You can see some of the shots, and they look so standard, like, you always seen this camera work all the time. But keep in mind, in 75 or so, nobody had ever done this. And it's things like the swooping around the person, like having a camera go around a person, following a person up or down stairs, because you can't do it. You can't build the dolly track to go up or down the stairs. And if you just haul the camera up and down, it's so jerky that it makes people nauseous. In our heads, when we walk, we have an automatic little thing in our brain that just kind of compensates for that, and we don't.
It's our steady cam.
Yes, it's our own mental steady cam.
Our gyroscope.
But here's the killer. One of his shots is a shot of his girlfriend running first down and then up the steps to the Philadelphia Library.
Oh, Rocky. Yeah.
And essentially the exact shot of following her up the steps and then going around her once, and then that is what became the shot.
Because
in Rocky,
he did that.
The people making Rocky said,
"Hey,
where are those steps?" And they said Philadelphia, and they said that's perfect.
Yeah,
because they thought it was another one that was, and this is where Kubrick got his fingers in it too. Jim, have you seen The Shining?
Sure.
How about the extended sequences of following Danny on his little plastic trike?
Yes,
through his big wheel through the corridors of the Overlook Hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Steadicam. Yeah. Couldn't have been done like that.
Yep.
Previous. They would have had to have such like, oh, well, Danny, why is Danny riding his big wheel down train tracks?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So that they have
a
dolly.
Well, no, they could just digitally remove those train tracks after
sure,
the fact,
in
right?
1978.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait.
1980
yeah.
or whatever.
They could paint them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it'll be extra easy to paint them out because it's those weird that weird carpet in
right.
the Overlook
oh,
Hotel
sure.
with
yeah.
all those patterns on it.
Yeah, that movie would have been released sometime in the 90s.
So it was just, yeah, it was interesting. I found the little podcast that I listened to about it. I went to Wikipedia. I dug up the Impossible Shots video. And you know, like I said, it's one of those things that you've seen before. But he goes underneath a water slide, like, you know, just a slide at a pool.
Uh-huh.
He goes underneath that. He couldn't have done that before
mm-hmm.
Because the dolly and the tracks would have been too clumsy to get underneath where the little, you know, to get underneath the structure that's holding up that little slide where he followed a person along swimming across a pool. And then he does the thing where he swings around the people and he goes up and downstairs and he does a few other shots, including this like gigantic, just huge running long thing across a field, up and down hills, through trees, things you couldn't have done with the dolly. But he got his start on Sesame Street.
There you go. It all comes back. Well, they're going to run me out of here.
All right. Yeah, we're going to run you out of here, too.
People are going to be in here in any minute.
Okay.
I don't speak Spanish, so.
Don't forget to tip.
I never do. I never forget to.
I never do.
I never forget to. Notice the correction.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thanks, Jim.
Yes, thank you.
Mike, where can they find us?
They can find us at nerdburgershow.com, at nerdburgershow on the Twitters and the Facebook. Email us, nerdburgershow@gmail.com, and
nerdburgergames.com for game stuff. Super fast. Let's roll.
Jim needs clean sheets and towels.
On the next episode of Nerdburger, Mike and Craig start the petition to add amateur nerdburgering to the Olympics for the 2020 games. Nerdburgering involves lying on a sofa, watching Netflix, and playing mobile games while eating chili and spicy beef taquitos.
Don't forget to tap your foot.
Last person to soil themselves wins.
Ooh.
In more ways than one.
Wow.
Nice.
I win.
You do. You kind of do.